Thursday, July 9th, 2024. I'm Rim.
And I'm Scott.
And this is Geek Nights. Tonight we are talking about games at the beach, like the sandy beach.
Let's do this.
So, Scott, have you ever been stung by a wasp?
I've been stung by a bee.
Was it a bee or a yellow jacket?
I'm pretty sure it was a bee because basically I was playing wiffle ball and my brother was batting and I was pitching, right? And there's a bee comes out of the ground because it was a bee that lives in the ground.
Well, that could be a yellow jacket, but it could also be a bee.
Anyway, it comes out of the ground and it starts buzzing around him. Mm-hmm. And he starts swinging the wiffle ball at it.
Well, you know what? That's his own damn fault.
And I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah. When I was a kid, if I saw a wasp or a bee that looked that was remotely coming near us, you'd leave that guy alone. Don't mess with him.
So he finishes swinging the bat at the pointy insect of, and then I'm getting ready to pitch, and suddenly, right under my chin, like right, you know, here, the flat part that aims straight down is like doink. And I went smack, and it basically you could see it was like, you know, black and yellow stripes, like a ball shape. And basically, the spiky part and half of its ass,
were cartoonishly
sticking out of the bottom. It was like a spike and a half a sphere, and the rest of it was gone because I smacked it. And I pulled it out. And thankfully, I'm not allergic. But
yep. Well, I mean,
I think that's the only time I've been stung by a bee. I've been stung by mosquitoes.
Yeah.
One time I was bitten by something unknown.
Ooh. Yeah, but I'm talking specifically about the kind of bug that has a stinger on the back who isn't a scorpion. Any bug in that category.
I mean, I guess it was a bee. It had a stinger of some kind. Yeah, but it wasn't like a wasp or a hornet or anything.
I got stung by a wasp once. I got stung by a yellow jacket once. And mine was, I'm just standing there. I'm like on a, you know, those play sets with monkey bars and stuff that you have in the backyard in the suburbs. We had a big one of those in the backyard. I'm standing on it. And I feel a little tiny prick on my toe. And I look down and there's a yellow jacket and it has stung my pinky toe just on its own while I'm just standing there. And I'd never been stung before. And for a moment I thought, that wasn't so bad. Huh. And then it started to hurt like a motherfucker.
Yeah, because the pain isn't really from the stinging, but the physical sting. The pain is from whatever venom the thing has.
Yep. So we were upstate at a good barbecue with some friends hanging out, talking about video games. We're hanging out outside. And every time someone walks outside, we're warned, watch out, there's a wasp's nest on the left side of this one bench. Just don't sit right there.
Why didn't they go spray it with deadly chemicals prior to their barbecue?
I mean, it's a tiny little nest. There's like three wasps in it. It's so little.
I mean, you know, I'm not going to go and pester insects that aren't, you know, like, I guess if it was the lantern flies, because they're a problem. But it's like, you know, if it's just like a spiders or some ants or whatever, who cares, right? But if it's ones that are going to attack people.
Wasps, it's like you've got an enemy airstrip filled with fighter jets just like sitting next to you.
Right, exactly. And it's like, okay, if it was like out in my woods or something or like, you know, but it's like if I'm having people over or like children are going to be there or there's like a reason. It's like if they're just deadly or not to be deadly, but dangerous, right? Or you know, aggressive, potentially aggressive. I'm not going to bother them just because of that. But if there's going to be people that are going to be near them because it's my property and I'm going to do something in that, then it's like, all right, you got a problem here.
Yep.
I'm going to come at you with my human weapons.
But everyone's being good. Everyone's avoiding it. And this isn't a story of someone went and messed with it. No one did anything. I ended up sitting for a while kind of right near it. But, you know, I'm not worried about wasps. And wasps will generally leave you alone unless they perceive that you have slighted them in some way. Mm-hmm. And there's one cool dude we know is hanging out at the party. And he has never been stung by any such insect in his life.
And he, of course, he was stung by such an insect.
Oh, yes. And he was, he respected the wasp, had heard tale of wasp stings suck and wasps are assholes. So he was giving this thing appropriate birth. He was being the most careful of anyone at this party to go nowhere near where the wasps are. And one of the wasps...
Now you could have known well in advance. He could have taken wagers. I guess he could have stayed inside the whole time to avoid...
I feel like the wasp would have gotten inside and gotten him. It's like the wasps knew and they waited for their moment because he didn't fucking do anything. And at one point, he's not even near.
I wasn't the one who swung the bat at the bee.
Right? This wasp flies out of the nest, flies toward him, who has not even been near the nest in a while, and just stings him right on the foot.
Well, listen, this could be, you know, with the global warmings, right? As New York becomes closer to, you know, what, say, a Carolina was over time, or a Virginia, or a more southerly place, we're going to get more, you know, things like that. Right? But it's like warm weather makes people angrier too, I imagine.
I don't tell the story of random freakout I see in Midtown every time we do a show, but I see a lot of random freakouts in the street.
Right. The summer madness is well known, and we know with this evidence to suggest it makes people more aggressive and angry.
Yep.
I'm willing to wager it has the same effect on animals of various kinds.
But wasps are already maximally angry.
I don't know about that. They could always
hit a new level
angry.
Of anger. It's like a gas turns into a plasma, a wasp turns into some new form of terror. But his reaction to being stung was amazing, because basically at this party we determined that pretty much everyone there had been stung by something at some point. And like, I didn't think about the fact that as an adult, like, if I get stung by something again now, I know I'm not allergic and I kind of know the deal. Like, I know what to expect. He'd never been stung by anything before. So he's like, ow, that really hurts. And then he sits down and he's like, so you've all been stung by these kinds of things before. What should I expect? And we start
pain.
We start walking through like, well, in about 10 minutes, it's going to hurt way more than you think it's going to hurt. And that's only the beginning. And then we start walking him through it. And it was funny to watch this like, tell me what to expect. And all of the wizened elders who've experienced this before are imparting their wisdom one by one. And we all recounted our experiences of, I got stung. But it was interesting that everyone we talked to at this party had been stung as a kid except this one guy. It's like a regular rite of passage.
Maybe that was that guy had like a special strategy to like become a memory on purpose. Yeah. Like to tell a story about not getting stung and then get stung. That's like next level.
Well, you know, like I remember, because when I was in high school, I remember talking to people at a party, and I just remember this conversation where everyone was talking about how everyone breaks their arm at some point when they're a kid, and that's like a rite of passage. And it was weird to me because everyone at this party had broken their arm at some point, and they thought it was weird that I'd never broken my arm. Meanwhile, all my real friends, like, who weren't at this party, all the weirdo nerds, none of them had ever broken their arm before. And it was weird to me how many of these kids had broken their arms. But I think the reason they had all broken their arms is that we lived in Michigan, and this was the kind of place where a lot of parents had trampolines. And I'm pretty sure the trampoline was responsible for the super majority of all of those broken arms. Anyway, got any news? Of course you do, because Nintendo Direct happened.
Yeah, that was already like a super long time ago. We just haven't done a podcast to talk about it since then. Yeah, it was like in June maybe. But yeah, there was a Nintendo Direct, and there are many things announced at this Nintendo Direct, but we'll only talk about, you know, the big ones, right? So the first big one is that they're going to make another game in the Mario and Luigi's, you know, RPG series, right? Which started off with the Superstar Saga.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't had one of those in like a decade or more, right? A long ass time. So that's, you know, a whole new game, not a remake. That's pretty good. And by the way, I think you can play the Superstar Saga on the GBA Nintendo Online app.
Ooh,
so
I should check, because I've actually never played it.
They're really good.
And I know they're really good.
They don't take that long. They're basically just JRPGs, but with Mario and Luigi, obviously. And you do, you know, it's sort of like Mario RPG, where you sort of have to do timed button presses, right? You see the same mechanic also in like Paper Mario, which is also an RPG. But, you know, it's just a different twist on the same thing. I think what else was interesting? There was
Nintendo World Championships looks really fun, because I do
like... Right, so the Nintendo World Championships is going to be like $30.
Yeah, that is, I was about to say, the problem is it looks really fun and I like that kind of thing, but I can experience that kind of thing like at MAGFest with their championships. Like that little emulator thing they have set up with the special challenges.
Yeah. I think it's only worth it if you're really a speed runny, hyper competitive type person.
Yeah.
Right? Otherwise, it's not worth it, all that money.
Which is a shame because it looks fun. It just doesn't look $30 fun, considering that its focus does seem to be, like you said, more on speed running and technique and less on, like, here's a weird challenge. Beat Bubble Man. You've only got Quick Man's weapon and you start at half health. Go.
Yeah. They added some games more, you know, Metroid Zero Mission, which is a great way to play Metroid 1. If you haven't played that, is on the Nintendo Online app for GBA. Also, the Link to the Past GBA version that includes like the Four Swords mini game is on there. And they're going to make a way to do that part online. But the thing is, that's the Four Swords like sort of like side game. It's not really...
It's not the
biggest,
real full-length Four
not,
Swords.
The GameCube Four Swords is the real deal. It's not on there. They also made a new app. There's now two Nintendo 64 apps on your Switch. The regular one and a separate one just for like rated M games.
That was my news a long time ago on Geek Nights when they announced that in Japan.
Yeah. So the only games in there are Perfect Dark and Turok, which are, you know, funny. Really big news is that, you know, all the Marvel Capcom games, you know, since MVC3 came out, which I don't know how big a deal that was, but I don't really see people care about that anymore. But all the MVC games have been sort of in a limbo, right? Mostly because of the rights, because you got Marvel characters and Capcom characters, right? And so it's always tricky because they make a deal when they originally make the game. But then does the deal still exist for them to make a remake years later or to re-release it years later? But it seems that whatever the issues were have been sorted out, and they're going to make for all platforms, not just for Switch, but it was first announced at the Switch Nintendo Direct, the MVC Fighting Collection that has all of those games, except for three, I guess, but all the old ones, one, two, the ones, you know, all of them, right? And including this Punisher beat-em-up one that I never knew existed. So the MVC2 people are super excited about that. There's a new Mario Party, which is like, right?
The Mario Parties have not done it for me in a long time at this point.
But there is one thing about this Mario Party that made me raise an eyebrow.
I'm looking here because I didn't watch the full Nintendo Direct yet, and I see exactly what
you're about
to say.
It has some sort of 20-player online mode, which could be exciting.
The thing is, give me a WarioWare Incorporated 20-player online game and with turtles, and I would pay a lot of money for that.
Let's go. Here's something I want to talk about more, is that, you know, they made that remake, the HD remake of Link's Awakening.
If you've never played Link's Awakening, you could just play this one. It's phenomenal. It's beautiful. It's basically just the exact same game.
It's like, you know, there's a thing with the HD remakes, like, because one side of me is like, why do they keep making these remakes? I could just play the original game, right? And that matters, I think, more when the gap between the original game and the remake is less, right? So, like, they're like Metroid Prime HD remakes, and it's like, I got a GameCube discs. I don't really need remakes. Those are just fine, right? But, you know, they got a Mario RPG remake that I bought and played, which, I don't know, was really worth $60.
But like, Link's Awakening was OG Game Boy in the beginning of the Game Boy Color era.
Right. It's like, but it was a lot more friendly to play that than to play the old Super Nintendo original. But like, there's a Thousand Year Door remake, and if you can just play the original, I don't really see a reason to go for the remake. But if you can't just play the original because you don't have a GameCube or you're not going to emulate or pirate or figure out whatever you got to do, that remake is probably, you know, the same thing, only better. But the interesting thing here is that they're making a new game called Legend of Zelda Echoes of Wisdom, in which you are Zelda and you can basically copy any item and use that to solve puzzles and get around and do everything you got to do. You could watch the trailer to understand what's going on there.
But I think it looks real fun.
Oh, it looks way fun, right? And it's a lot more in line with... It's more like a two... You know, I guess it's not 2D, but... you know, it's a lot more in line with Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, where you're building and making stuff, right? And so I think that's what Zelda games are like about now.
And I think why they made this one specifically was partly because
they're closer to, they like had this Garry's Mod element into Zelda, which is
Total aside, at this barbecue, there was one individual who the hill he was gonna fucking die on was that Breath of the Wild was better in every way than Tears of the Kingdom, and he hated Tears of the Kingdom.
All right.
And he's trying to explain this, and in the same fashion as our crew, when that kind of conversation happens with the one person who has that kind of incorrect idea, every time someone walked into the room who knew this guy, they'd be like, oh, he's talking about his fucking bad Zelda opinions again, and they'd leave.
Why was that person invited? Not invited next time. But the point about this game, all right, is that they've done something which I haven't seen done before, which is that they went and did an HD remake.
And then they made a sequel to the remake.
And then it's not a sequel to the remake, but they made another game on the remake engine, right? So like you've seen, for example, like Capcom has done all these Resident Evil remakes, which I highly recommend because the original Resident Evils are extremely unfun to play control-wise and interface-wise, and the remakes make them very playable. But imagine if they're like, all right, here's Resident Evil 2 HD remake, and now here's a brand new Resident Evil game you've never seen before. We're going to use the engine that we put all that work into for that remake.
And
that, no
that's,
one's
I think,
done
why
that
part of why they made
that
this
I know
game,
of.
Because That Link's Awakening remake is absolutely beautiful. It almost has this like tilt shift putty model style. It looks so good.
But if you do all the work to make an HD remake or a new remake of an old game, you've just made a new engine. Why not make new games on that engine? And it's actually, I think it's a good strategy, in fact, because, you know, it's hard to just make an engine from nothing. It's like the most successful game engines were always made in tandem with a game.
Yep.
Right? Like Unreal Engine is made, you know, I guess Unity would be an exception that wasn't made with a game, but like
yeah,
the Doom
but
engine,
Unity
Quake
is circling
engines,
the toilet right now, so.
Yeah, but all the like the great game engines were someone made a game and they made an engine for that game, and then that engine got reused and all those further games were effectively mods. And it's like, this is exactly that. So, you know, but you can start off without having to put so much effort on the game part if you're doing a remake, because the game is mostly already designed for you.
But this also illustrates something very important about the game design, that this is effectively, this engine, this is a 2D Zelda. The game design and video games are still in their infancy, considering they were invented in living memory of humans who are alive today as a medium and a concept. And the fact that you can basically take the constraints of a 2D map like Link's Awakening, and there's still unplumbed depths of game design and new games, says a lot about how little we've scratched the surface of what video games could be. Imagine what video games would be like a couple hundred years from now.
Well, it also says that some little tiny game that was made for the Game Boy, they did such a good job that you don't actually need to change the game very much at all. You just need to, you know, make it work on modern technology, change the artwork a
little
bit.
Much like, think about old stories like The Odyssey. Get an HD remake of The Odyssey when Emily Wilson translated it, and it's relevant today, and it's still good.
Yeah. All right. And so the final one is, after a very long wait, right, Nintendo does have a history of announcing games at, you know, directs or E3s or other events that never came to pass. I remember there was like some Project Hammer thing and some others. But in this case, when this like early when the Switch came out, 2017, I think, it's like 7 years ago, they announced Metroid Prime 4. And then the next time they were like, listen, we had problems. We had to start from scratch, basically. They didn't say all the details, but they basically were like, yeah, we didn't like the direction it was going, so we're going to try again with Metroid Prime 4. And then they were silent for 6 or 7 years.
Yep.
And we basically said, well, they're never going to say and make an announcement that they've given up, right? They'll just not say anything. So now there's no way to know. But now they came out and they said, nope, we're good. Here's an actual trailer. And it's like, all right, well, that means it's ready. So it's coming out in 2025, which you have to imagine means that it will be a launch title for the new console, whatever it's called.
I wouldn't bet against that. That's been Nintendo's pattern for a while now.
Yes, and if you remember, Breath of the Wild came out, you know, as like a very early, was it a launch title for Switch, or was it very early, like first week or something, but it was simultaneously released on the Wii U, right? So I imagine Metroid Prime 4 will be similar to where it'll be on Switch, but also new console at the same time, just like Breath of the Wild was. And good.
Oh, I didn't realize the Breath of the Wii U version only renders at 720p.
That's correct.
The Switch version actually renders at 900p.
Yep.
I think that's the only difference.
That's the only difference that I'm aware of is just, you know.
Other than you've got to interact with a Wii U, which is a mixed bag.
Yeah, the controller is different. Yeah.
So in one little news, Xbox Cloud Gaming. I didn't notice this. I just saw this news and it's, I wouldn't say fascinating, but it's very indicative of, I think, where the AAA non-Nintendo consoles are going long-term. Xbox Cloud Gaming just works on Amazon Fire Sticks, the new ones, as long as you pay for their most expensive Game Pass.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, you don't need an Xbox. If you have this thing, it'll just work.
I mean, I have the Apple TV 4K, and when we use Steam Stream, it's like, you wouldn't know.
Yeah.
That you're streaming. I mean, you know, and of course, from the internet, you might know it's going to be a little slower, right? It might be a little lower quality than Steam streaming from inside the house.
Yeah, because if I Steam stream to the living room, I'm Steam streaming from a workstation with a 4080 in it that is literally wired physically to the same network.
Right, depending on the game. But the thing is, if you stream from the internet, from their cloud service, you are going to have worse network between you and them. But you're streaming from like some mega PC that they've got up in their cloud, right? Some like mega server that's ultra powerful with who knows what GPUs up there. So, you know, a little more of one, a little less of the other. But yeah, I mean, you know, if you think about this, it's like, hey, people already have, you know, the TV that I got, the smart TV function that I never use, the TV itself can do game streaming.
Plus, honestly, $17 a month for like the ultimate Game Pass thing, if that's what your bag. An Xbox costs what, $300, $350? So
yeah,
if you, instead of buying an Xbox, you could pay for this for 1.5 years without having to buy a console.
I mean, if you consider the fact that most consoles have been sold like at a loss or very low margins just to get, you know, it's a razor deal, right? And the games are where they make the money.
Yep.
Switching all the games, you know, basically every company has, you know, a Netflix game distribution model in their back pocket or in their front pocket or their side pocket. Yep. Xbox Game Pass being sort of like, I guess, the front runner, at least right now. Netflix has games on there. It's like, yeah, all the people who don't need to say play games where there's no internet or, you know, have high performance games or anything like that. It's like, why would you pay hundreds and hundreds of dollars for a console to have, you know, this hardware in your house when the cheap hardware you already own can play every game and you don't need to worry?
I think long term, like over the next decade, the three kinds of video gaming are basically going to be Nintendo consoles, streaming to devices like this, or the PC gamers who are playing their highly specialized PC games.
We'll see if, you know, the nerdy one continues to be an option, right? Because if you're a game developer,
I'm shocked the nerdy one has continued to be an option, to be honest.
Yeah.
I'm thankful.
It's like,
I'm grateful.
I think long term it'll only be an option for, like, you know, games made by indie nerds for indie nerds. And like, why would big companies, why would they, you know, if they can get people to subscribe to some game service, they should just make the very, you know, the minimal amount of games they need to keep people subscribed, put as much microtransactions on there as they need to make as much money as they can. And why would they bother with hardware or anything else extra?
Well,
I
think about the people I know outside of like our extremely rarefied nerdy circles, like coworkers, a lot of them are gamers and their families are gamers, but they either are Nintendo only, PlayStation or Xbox only, or PC gaming and Nintendo. I don't know anyone who's just PC gaming, and I don't think I've met anyone who is PC gaming and traditional AAA console.
I think there's too much overlap between, you know, PC gaming and PlayStation/Xbox. Like, owning two of those is sort of redundant.
I think
right?
so.
It's like, unless you just, you know, there's some people I do know who are PC gaming, but they will also have a PlayStation because there's like a few PlayStation exclusives that like they're absolutely crazy about. But Sony's starting to get rid of those. There's a lot of those games are coming to PC. So,
yep. But anyway, things of the day. So I have two notes about this video because recently I was reminded of one of my favorite animated GIFs of all time, like top five animated GIFs that I ever encountered in my life. It's this video. It's a very short clip of a guy launching a tall model rocket. And just as he launches it in slow motion, it slowly falls over, pointed directly at him. And he reacts as fast as a human can to try to get out of its way and fails to do so. And it's just really funny and really short. It's like perfect comedy.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, I don't know why anyone was standing that close to a model rocket.
I mean, I was only ever a few feet away when I launched model rockets.
Yeah, but it's like usually we would, you know, as long as the wires between would go is how far away.
But I never in my
stay.
Life, I used to be really into rocketry. I never had the launch pad fall over.
That's yeah.
I would like drive stakes always, into the ground, but
it would always be as far away as, you know, the equipment allowed us to be.
So I was reminded of that. So I looked around like, all right, internet, show me what a modern model rocket failure looks like in glorious HD. And I found this video that is called High Power Rocketry Fail Compilation. And I have two observations. Observation number one, every one of these is hilarious and they're all hilarious for different reasons.
There's a lot of ways it can go wrong.
Yep. My favorites actually are very
thankfully
early in the
there
video.
Were no people harmed.
Yeah,
in the
no one's harmed either. That's very important. Two of my favorite moments from this video are very early. One is the absolutely beautiful Tintin rocket that just explodes.
Like, well, that's a tradition, right? It's like even in summer camp, there would always be some kids, you know, a handful who would they would make the coolest looking rocket that was stylish or weird and or amazing or not normal, right? And you know, those rockets, it's like you knew that they were not going to fly properly.
Yeah.
But it's like, but you really wanted them to because like they were the best ones.
In middle school, I watched a really cool X-Wing make it about 4 feet off the ground and then just turn sideways and immediately crash into a tree.
Yeah, it's like, but if some kid just like made it with the kit according to the kit instructions and didn't do anything weird, it's like it was very reliable. It worked perfectly. Yeah.
Yep.
It's like boring and uninspiring, but it's like, yeah, okay.
But the other one that is
why
great
can't,
in
why
this
can't
video, so cool. Specifically, is there's one where they go to launch it, and the motor starts up, like the rocket engine starts, and then the top just pops off with the payload and everything. And then after a perfect comedic beat of nothing happening, the bottom fully ignites, and this like split in two rocket with its parachute already out tries to fly and spins around like crazy in the air and then crashes and disintegrates. But this my second primary observation about this video, and a friend of ours pointed this out immediately after I posted it. Almost every fail in this video is from what appears to be the same event, which leads me to question the fuck was going on at this event that all like 90% of the rockets failed, or were there like 1,000 rockets and they just showed us the 50 that failed?
Yeah,
what was going on?
I've only ever been to like summer camp events where, like I said, most of the rockets were people following the kit instructions, and then a few people would, you know, make a weird one or a big one or something that would maybe may or may not work.
Well, part of it,
you know,
I think
don't know
these
what
are
it's
not,
like at
these are
know,
not
an
kit
amateur.
Rockets. These are not like an
Estes obviously.
Or a Quest
right.
That's using like an A-10 or like a B-12 or whatever rocket.
Right.
These are like high powered custom. You need a permit for this rockets.
So I don't know what these events are like, right? Or how many people, is this normal for this kind
I
of event?
I think this is normal for these.
There's so many amateurs who aren't, you know, right?
Because these fail like in such baby's first rocket ways as someone who was very into rocketry as a kid, that either nobody here knew what they were doing or they're just trying to make rockets that are way too powerful for their capabilities.
And the other thing is that, you know, that's sort of what model rocketry and I guess what real world rocketry was about in its early stages, right? And when new people getting into the hobby are sort of re-experiencing that, which is that it's trial and error, right? You're not just going, it's boring and stupid to get into the hobby and then just copy someone else's mm-hmm. already working rocket. What's the point in that, right? Yep. That's not fun or interesting. It's like you're sort of, everyone's going through that trial and error phase where it's like you see how your rocket failed and you correct for it and you repeat and then you start making reliable ones. But then, you know, you have something specific you want to do that's weird or different, and now you have to trial and error to get that to work if it's even possible.
Craziest thing I ever did, and it failed. We missed. We don't even know what we hit. I launched a rocket with my parents' full consent because my dad thought this was hilarious. We had a rocket, and the goal was we tried to launch it over our neighborhood at night to egg someone's house. We wanted to hit a specific house with
that's
an egg
really
on the roof.
You can't aim with a rocket like that.
You can. But were kids, and we did not do it right, and we lost the rocket, and we don't know where it went or the egg went or anything.
Well, current rockets these days, people put GPS trackers
in. Yeah, that was not an option in like 1994.
You don't say. You know, can't just drop an Apple little thingy in there.
So you got a thing of the day? I mean, I know you do because I watched the video that you linked me to.
Right. I mean, you know, we don't like to use the same thing over and over again, but there was SGDQ last week, right? AGDQ is usually around, you know, New Year's MAGFest mm-hmm. time, and SGDQ is around 4th of July every year. And last time, they had a speed run from Peanut Butter the Dog, the first time that I know of a non-human was featured as a speedrunner. And so this time in SGDQ, Peanut Butter the Dog showed up in person. And I was trying to think. I'm like, oh, Peanut Butter the Dog's coming back. I wonder what game, because last time they played Gyromite, which is a game that's perfect for a dog.
And I want to point out, when we talked about this, I predicted there would basically start to become a dog percent category in that there would be more games and this is going to become a thing. But I couldn't think of what games would be good because this is really
Gyromite is a perfect game. If you know anything about Jeremiah, I'm not going to explain it to you. You can look it
up. Absolutely,
right?
It's absolutely perfect. Can't think of a
better
game.
The perfect game for a non-human to assist in, right? What game did they play? I couldn't believe Ken Griffey Jr.'s MLB for the SNES, which was the best baseball game for the Super Nintendo by far.
Yep.
Also the
baseball
most popular.
Baseball Simulator 1000 was a distant second.
Well, that was a different kind of game. This was an actual baseball
I mean, if you
game.
Turned off the nonsense, it was just a baseball game. But
that
nobody
was,
turned
it
off
was
the
more
nonsense.
Like an NBA Jam kind of deal. But this one was a real baseball game. And I'm like, holy shit, how is a dog going to play this game? And I'm like, well, the dog, you know, it's not a speed run, really. They're going to play one game, and that's 9 innings, and try to win. I don't know if they scripted this. It's like they scripted it extremely well and made it very believable. But it I don't think it could have gone better than it did.
I mean, if you understand a game very well, as we know from, you know, I've watched a lot of A and SGDQs in my life so far, like a lot of them. There are definitely games where you could come up with a path where there's a limited number of relatively loosely timed button presses that have a huge impact, and that's the cleverness. Finding games that you can do this to.
Anyway, so this is the new bar. Where I won't feature GDQ on the thing of the day again unless there's a run better than this one.
Yeah.
There were a lot of good ones, though, this time. So
yeah, actually,
go to the YouTube and check it out.
The Wand of Gamelon run was the best Wand of Gamelon run I've ever seen. I actually watched the whole thing. It wasn't painful. It was good commentary. And of course, my boy, Quest for Glory 2, that was a good speed run because they did Fighter. Nobody does Fighter. I was glad to see Fighter.
I think it was because there was a donation incentive to choose the class.
There
so it
was.
Could have been any,
I was
it could have been any
shocked
class.
That Fighter got the vote. All right. Let's dive into this. So we did a show back on August 2nd, 2018 called How to Not Suck at the Beach. And that was just talking about beaching. Mm-hmm. But there's a subset.
We did an episode about outdoor like yard games.
Yeah.
Like I think we did anyway.
We had to have. If we didn't, that's an easy show.
Lawn games.
Yeah,
I'm
like bocce
sure
and such.
Yeah.
I was about to say I'm good at bocce, but I don't know. I haven't played bocce in like a decade. I don't know if I'm any good at bocce anymore. We should go to Bryant Park and play bocce.
We can. There's an actual bocce court in Astoria Park where the old guys play.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it existed a long time ago, and then it got run down because no one was using it. The old guy, some old guy who was way into bocce, came and renovated it on his own. And there's like a little thing there full of bocce equipment, and I've seen old guys out there playing.
We should go talk.
That's my life. That's my life's goal, is to become an old man who plays bocce in the park with other old men.
Yeah,
or can get started early.
Be the old man who referees for the other old men playing bocce.
They don't referee; they just yell at each other. That's how you got to do it.
So we're talking today about the Venn diagram between games, lawn games, outdoor games, which could include board games, and the beach games to play at the beach, because there's actually a lot of constraints at beaches, to the point that we're going to actually have to talk about different kinds of beaches and different seasons to really explore this. This is actually a bigger topic than I thought of. But I think before we even talk about specific games, the thing that I think is the most important about games at the beach is that most of the time, anyone who says they want to play games at the beach or brings games to play at the beach is going to fail. Because if you do not have a critical mass of people who are the kinds of people who will go to a beach early in the day and stay there all day, then the odds of any game getting played approach zero rapidly. And yep. Nothing we say will matter beyond that. Well, I know people, I've been there watching people trying to get a game going at the beach. It's real hard if you don't have a crew to roll with who are down for beach games.
Yeah, you have to play a game at the beach, right? You have to be at the beach long enough that you get your fill of going in the water.
Yep.
You get your fill of laying there reading.
Yep. You even get your fill of like making a sandcastle. Like you made the maximum sandcastle.
You get your fill of eating ice cream and your fill of everything that you're going to, all beach activities have been satiated. Then, and only then, will beach game suddenly take some, get its edge yep. in there. Like, huh, I guess we've done all the beach stuff, but we're still got some more hours at the beach because we're here so long. Let's do some beach game.
And I'm a gamer. Like, gaming is one of the most important things in my life. And yet, I put playing games near the bottom of my list of things I am interested in at the beach.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, I encounter people in my life, among my friend group, who really think they're going to get games to happen at the beach.
Yep. So, the first thing for beach games is that you want to prioritize games that can only be played at the beach, such as a beach volleyball.
Yep.
Did you know beach soccer is like a super popular sport?
I did not, but now I want to play
it. Beach soccer, it's like sand soccer. I actually watched a video about a dude who was from, I forget which South American country he's from, but like he moved to Japan to play beach soccer in Japan, like somewhat professionally. I guess it compensates enough that it was worth moving countries.
Oh, wow. I really want to play this now.
Beach soccer?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't respect soccer, the sport in general, but, you know, it's fun. I wouldn't watch it.
Soccer's real fun to play.
Yeah, well, I would play it. But the introduction of the sand as a surface dramatically changes just everyday sports that without, you know, the same way that ice transforms field hockey, right? You know, beach volleyball is completely different from gym volleyball, right? You've got the elements, the wind from the ocean coming in. You've got, you know, the surface. You can't like run. You got less people. It's usually 2-on-2. It's not usually what's regular volleyball, 6-on-6, right? I think. It's a lot harder to jump when the surface is different, but it's also easier to fall. Right. So you can do a lot more dives, right? In not that they don't dive in the gym, they just get hurt. Yep. They don't care. Right. But in beach volleyball, they're not armored up with all kinds of knee pads and elbow pads.
Well, also no cleats. You are barefoot. So like even like why I watched some videos just now, goddamn, the techniques of even like kicking and passing, it's a totally different game.
The point is, beach volleyball is a distinct sport, even in the Olympics, from regular volleyball, with good reason.
Yep. But I think this opens up to broader advice for gamers in general, because I see this problem with gamer nerds a lot. They will be in a place, context, situation that itself should be the focus, and yet they will bring games that could be played anytime, any place, in any environment, and almost pollute the experience they could be having, and then play Terraforming Mars like on a mountaintop when they could be enjoying the mountaintop.
Exactly. It's like, listen, after your mountaintop, you're still going to go to some cabin, and that's when you can bring out your Terraforming Mars.
Exactly.
You know, there is a spot at Splash, That's one. There are some games I know that can be played, you know, in wet areas.
So I think that's the key, though. It has to be games that either can only be played at the beach or that are in some way enhanced by being at the beach. Spotted Splash is like that. Because think about the way we play Spotted with the big mass of people yelling at each other. Mm-hmm. Double-fisted bomb mode. Do that in 4 feet of water, you got a fucking game going.
Of course, you'll lose pieces in the water.
I mean, they float. If you want to play the special version.
Yeah. If you want to play an actual like tabletop-y game at the beach, I would recommend a game that has like tiles, something like Hive. Mm. All right. And you know, cards always get blown away in the wind.
Yep.
It's just not going to happen, right? You can play chess or backgammon, right? Those have heavy pieces. Just make sure your dice are heavy enough.
Yep.
Something like that.
I played backgammon at the beach before.
If you're doing that during your under your umbrella time, you know, instead of reading a book, that's acceptable.
Yeah. But again, that's a situation where you're primarily enjoying the beach, and while you're there, you're playing some backgammon. Like you're not like,
exactly.
You're not prioritizing exactly. The backgammon over laying in the beach. You're kind of idly taking your turn.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing you can do is if you have a portable gaming device, you know, I don't like to use the phone too much at the beach.
Nope.
Because it gets hot. It gets hot.
Yep.
And phones don't like getting heated up so much. In fact, you know, the phone will complain like, I'm not charging anymore. It's too hot.
Yep.
It's also resume charging later when it's cold.
Very few screens on any modern devices are easy to see in bright sunlight. So unless you're at the beach in the evening, you're probably out of luck anyway.
You can get to one advantage would be to use a Game Boy Advance, which is perfect because, and you can basically replace your book with that, right? And the sunlight shining onto it makes it easier to use.
Yep. For those of you who are too young to remember the Game Boy Advance, you needed to point the fucking sun at it to be able to see it in any context.
Yeah. But yeah, a portable gaming device. I wouldn't bring my Switch to the beach.
No, there's sand is going to get in that thing no matter what.
A Tiger LCD game, perhaps.
Yeah, a disposable, a game you don't care if it breaks.
A little $1 digital Yahtzee, yep, with an LCD screen.
But I think you're
going
to prioritize sports and activity type games, mm-hmm, over video games, I think, at the beach.
Yeah, there's hit the ball back and forth without a net.
Yep.
Just have two rackets and a ball. There's throw the Nerf ball football that has wings on the back.
Yep. The various forms of dunk game, full contact, yep, dunking, lots of different, yep, names and rules for that. It's actually a game I really like to play, but as we get older...
Don't drown each other.
Yeah.
Don't get lifeguards to yell at you.
Yeah.
Find the best seashell. Always, you know, catch a crab. Who catches the best crab? Catch a crab first. Marco Polo, great for pools, not great for beaches.
Yeah, Marco Polo is really hard to play on the beach. Unless
especially if waves are coming, it's like you don't see them, and you know.
I have played Marco Polo at the beach and had a lot of fun, but we played it. You're in the really shallow water only, and it's more a game of like sneaking blindfolded tag, and it's more about just making the person who's blindfolded trip. Like that's mostly what you're doing.
Yep. You know what? It's really big. Just run on the beach because like. You know, if like in a race or whatever, because running on sand is dramatically different than running anywhere else.
I mean, it's not really a game, but what am I...
As long as it's not too... You got to watch out for the hot sand.
Yep. But also, if you're running the firm sand instead of the hot sand, like the sand that's wet, and you're not a person who knows a lot and is good at this and has experience, you're going to give yourself the worst blisters you've ever had in your life, and that's going to be the end of you.
Yep. One thing, if you have a dog, you can play throw a disc, right? Disc throwing is excellent at the beach.
I mean, disc throwing is one of the best beach activities there is, I think.
Yep. Of course, you know, surfing is or any kind of boarding in the water activity, you know, water ski, parasail, all those, which I have not done too much of those in my life, but they're there. They don't seem too dangerous. I wouldn't do it where there's like crazy dangerous waves. You know, I would do it where it's kind of moderate and I know I'm okay enough at swimming that I hopefully wouldn't drown.
Right? Now, of course, one thing I note, we've been basically talking only about the kind of beach we go to the most often, which is it is super hot out. You try to be there on the hottest possible day. It's a beach that is sand, like sand everywhere, and you're sitting in the sand mm-hmm. with an umbrella of some kind. But there are other kinds of beaches that I think are very different game environments. Like in the Midwest, you know, lake beaches, like big lake beaches, often you'd be there when it's cooler. Often there are picnic tables and like cabanas and shacks and things like right next to or on the beach. There's places to sit where it's, I actually would play a full-on tabletop or card game, like on a table in a semi-shelter that just happens to be on the beach, but that's a very different kind of beach, and that's very basically the equivalent of playing a board game on a camping trip. It's just the beach is there instead of the forest.
Yeah, the beach, that kind of beach doesn't compete so much, right, with its enticing oceanic waters.
That beach is more of a setting you could play a game in, and it's like the backdrop to it, as opposed to the beach is itself the primary activity.
Now, there is a game I've seen played on beaches a lot in recent years that I have not actually played myself, but I don't fully know the rules, and that is the spike ball game, which is where you have the trampoline, the mini trampoline, and you throw the ball at it.
Oh, yeah. I don't quite know the rules to that, but I see people playing it.
Yeah, I
never
get the,
see people playing
guess,
it that long, though, and I see them. I don't think they're following any particular rules. I think they're just throwing stuff till they get bored.
I think it's similar to like a four square, to like you stand around the trampoline and you like throw the ball at it, and then it goes up in the air and someone else has to hit the ball at it again, right? And it can't like touch the ground outside of it, right? Sort of like a hacky sack situation almost. I don't know what the exact rules are. I could read them, but what would be the point of that? You can read them yourself. Yeah. If I want to, I'll read them after the show. I've just seen it around and it seems to be popular at the beach, and I, you know, my guess is that the reason it's popular to do that at the beach versus anywhere else is because, just like with the beach volleyball, you can mix in the diving and such without the risk of injury because the sand and not hard ground or gymnasium floor or, you know, anything like that.
But yeah, I think your main takeaway is not so much about the beach, but if you're the kind of nerd, if you are commonly in situations, the beach is just one example, where you bring games to an event where it is hard to get other people to play games, look around and look at what all the other people are doing. If they're engaging with the place you're at, then that is the reason you are all there. Don't try to cram your Terraforming Mars into that. That's why no one's playing Terraforming Mars with you at the beach.
Yeah, it's like, and if you, you know, if you're not at the beach to enjoy the beach,
why did you come?
Why are you there?
Yeah,
I don't go on a ski trip to not ski.
Imagine
if I went on the ski trip, but I didn't want to ski, and I just stayed in the lodge the whole time, and I was like, hey guys, let's play some Terraforming Mars, but everyone, I'd be waiting there for hours and hours, so everyone else skis, then they finally get back, and they're probably tired.
Yep.
Maybe they'll play a game, not a Terraforming Mars.
I go on a lot of ski trips, and I learn to not even bring, I bring like Wizard at this point, and that's it. Because even on the trip I went with all pros, it was me and Skojo and Penny, like it was pros only. We played an average of 1.1 games per night before we fucking fell asleep. This has been Geek Nights with Rim and Scott. Special thanks to DJ Pretzel for the opening theme.
Be sure to visit our website at frontrowcrew.com for show notes, discussion, links, and more.
Remember, Geek Nights is not one, but four different shows. Mondays are science and technology. Tuesdays, gaming and games. Wednesdays are animation and comics. Thursdays are arbitrary and indiscriminate. Geek Nights is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 international license.
Geek Nights is recorded live with no studio and no audience. But unlike those other late shows, it's actually recorded at night.
The Patreon patrons for this episode of Geek Nights are Ellen Joyce, Linkigi, Dread, Lily, Tenebrae, Case, Care, Makes Music, Chris Haddad, Christopher Orr, Clinton Walton, Finn, Joel Hayes, Penny Reimer, Rebecca Dunn, Sam Erickson, Shervin Von Horl, and a bunch of people whose names I will not say. I highly recommend you read the Justice Sotomayor's dissent of the catastrophic Supreme Court decision. I'm just going to leave this little tidbit here for you. That's all I got for you tonight. If you live in the United States and you can vote, you'd really better vote for whoever the Democrats nominate no matter what, because there really isn't another option.
Never in the history of our republic has a president had reason to believe he'd be immune from criminal prosecution if he used the trappings of his office to violate the criminal law. Moving forward, however, all former presidents will be cloaked in such immunity. If the occupant of that office misuses official power for personal gain, the criminal law that the rest of us must abide will not provide a backstop. And here's how she ends her dissent, Katie. With fear for our democracy, I dissent.
I mean, it doesn't get stronger than that, Neil. Have you ever heard a justice be that strongly worded about the state of our democracy?
I have not. And what she's signaling here is it's not just about the Trump January 6th case. It's about every president who goes forward, indeed possibly Trump next year, and being immune now from the criminal law to be able to use the Justice Department in ways the court today calls absolutely immune to undermine elections, to go after individuals. This is a, you know, according to the dissent, which, you know, it seems like as grave a shift in our constitutional system as any in our lifetimes. Let me-